Chapter 3, Creating Your Resource Portfolio. In addition to doing some soul searching to prepare for your job hunt, it's helpful to do some document preparation. Documents range from lists of people you know or firms you're interested in, to scripts or other texts you want to keep in mind, to business cards, to the ubiquitous resume and cover letter. Many job search authorities have a particular recipe for the top 10 things you must prepare in advance of actually beginning to search for jobs. Recognizing that even within the field of patent law, people come from a range of backgrounds and bring to their job searches different qualifications, work histories, and strengths, we take more of a brainstorming approach. Virtually every job application requires a resume, a cover letter, and references. Enough jobs require writing samples that it's useful to have one or two handy. Beyond that, what you choose to prepare is up to you and depends upon your personal characteristics and skills, so tailor the advice in this chapter to fit your situation. While you might think of your resource portfolio as a kind of toolkit, its physical existence is probably best organized into a three-ring binder or file folders, plus a notebook for jotting down brainstorms. Ideally, it's probably most convenient to use both a thin three-ring binder for quick references and hanging files for larger items and things you don't need to refer to quickly or regularly, plus folders for records related to each individual job for which you apply. In everything related to your job search, this mantra should be droning in your head. Language matters. The more competition you have for the jobs you're applying for, the more it matters. Potential employers facing a hefty stack of applications look for any reason to thin the herd, and issues that can seem inconsequential can make or break your candidacy. These issues include typos in your materials, a passage that implies you are lukewarm about the job or would prefer to be somewhere else or otherwise aren't fully committed to this job. Your candidacy can also be affected by slight discrepancies between your work history as articulated on your resume and in the cover letter, or any indication that you have traits that would make you less than ideal as an employee. While these flaws might not exist objectively in your materials, it's the perception of the person reading your application that matters. You may have excelled in school, have a lineup of former employers willing to say that you walk on water and be superiorly qualified. Yet all of these things can be virtually erased by a slightly shoddy, say, two typos, or a lackluster written or oral self-presentation. This fact, of course, could make anyone utterly paranoid. Indeed, one of the harder judgment calls you have to make is where to draw the line. On one hand, should you be utterly precise, writing and editing your materials for eagle-eyed, over-interpretive readers who are looking for an opportunity to trash your application? On the other hand, you could become completely paranoid and paralyzed by the crazy dynamics of the situation. It's not about whether or not you are obsessive about your language, because you should be obsessive. It's about drawing the line between productive and unproductive obsession. There are also things you can do to mitigate the paranoia factor. You're already doing one important thing in your job search process, getting advice. Get good advice about the job search process by reading books, researching online, and talking to whatever contacts you have. This will help you to isolate what's important and what's not important so you can be obsessive in a targeted way. Find one or several people you trust and have them look over your materials. Make sure they aren't people who will correct your grammar and then tell you, "Looks great." You need people who can imagine themselves as potential employers and will honestly pick apart your materials using perfection as their standard. If the people in your life who can do that aren't necessarily great at grammar, go ahead and use "looks great." Readers for the grammar help. Finally, while you're preparing, don't lose sight of who you are. Sure, you want to portray your best self in your job materials, but you don't want to be anyone other than yourself. Imagining all of the potential readers and their over or misinterpretation of you is a centrifugal force. Counteract that with your own centripetal force. Do what you need to do to take care of yourself and remain centered on both professional and personal levels. Your contact information. Because virtually everything you send out related to your job search will include ways to get in touch with you, spend time strategizing about how you want your contact information to work before you put together all of your materials. Consider the following issues first. Number 1. Address. Your snail mail address is used less often than it used to be. Potential employers tend to use email or telephone to reach you. However, you still need to list a working address, one where you check the mail daily. Keep in mind that the address or addresses you include communicate messages about you to potential employers. If your resume includes only a home address, it sends a message that you do not currently have a job or that you're being extremely discreet about your job search. Neither is necessarily a problem, but depending upon your individual situation, they're worth considering. If you include the address of your current place of employment, mail may get sent there. Consider the real risk of potential employers sending mail to you at work. Do your current employers know you are looking for work? If not, will an envelope from a potential employer arouse suspicion? Is there a chance that a coworker might open your mail? If you believe that there is truly a risk in including your current work address on documents like your resume, don't do it. If there isn't a risk, go ahead and leave it on there. Number 2. Telephone number. Your contact information should include only phone numbers where you actually answer the phone, or at least check messages very often. As with your work address, consider whether your work phone is private, and don't list it if you think it's not. With your home phone number, consider who might potentially answer your phone. Could it be a screeching 4-year-old or your roommate who's a little too chatty when answering your calls who might forget to leave you a message? If those are possibilities, don't list your home number. In fact, the job search is an ideal time to use your personal cell phone number, where you can have control over answering it and can benefit from having a clear caller ID displayed. Whatever telephone numbers you provide to potential employers, or, for the matter, people with whom you are networking, make sure that all of your outgoing messages sound professional. It's not unheard of for potential employers to contact people at phone numbers they haven't offered, especially today when it's so easy to find contact information online. This is especially true of your current work number, so be prepared for the possibility that you could be contacted at work, even if you haven't invited people to do so. Number 3. Email. Email is the communication form most likely to be intercepted and read by current employers, so it should not be considered as a confidential medium. If you don't have a private email address, or if you have one but your user ID is your childhood nickname or an inside joke, get a new private email address for professional purposes. Your current internet service provider may offer multiple email addresses attached to your account, so you could create a new email specifically for your job search. Or, if you are considering creating your own website, you can associate email addresses with the website. For example, if you decided to invest in a website with your name, www.janesmith.com, you could set up an email address like jane@janesmith.com. Number 4. Website. Speaking of websites, it's becoming more common for job seekers to create their own professional websites. This option is both a contact point and a possible item for your resource portfolio. The ins and outs of websites are discussed later in this chapter. Your job hunting resource portfolio. Some of the items discussed below are documents intended to be handed to potential employers or other contacts. Some are for your personal reference, to make sure that you have the information and ideas you will need to be prepared for letter writing, interviewing, and communicating with people about your job search. You definitely need to have the following documents. A. A resume. B. A cover letter. Different versions of a cover letter, or a cover letter skeleton that you can tailor to different jobs without having to start from scratch. C. A list of people willing to act as references. Number 1. At least one writing sample. Number 2. Positioning statements with several variations. And number 3. Well-organized records of what you have done in your job search, who you have contacted, and so forth. Items A, B, and C are listed using letters because they are discussed elsewhere, resumes and cover letters in a separate document, and references in the next chapter. Here are more details about the other three items. Number 1. Writing sample or samples. Although not all potential employers want to see a writing sample, it's fairly likely that you'll be asked for one at some point in your job hunt, so you should prepare at least one writing sample. The length and genre of the writing sample will vary according to your field and specialization, the type of patent law you will be engaged in, relatively more technical or more persuasive, and your background. If you're fresh out of law school, you won't be expected to have, say, an actual patent application that you filed. A good guideline is to see the writing sample from potential employers' perspective. The most important thing they're trying to learn is not how well you have written, but how well you are going to write if you come to work for them. With that in mind, put yourself in potential employers' shoes. Ask yourself what you'll be writing, and if you don't know, give your best guess. And prepare writing samples that match or approximate that writing as closely as possible. In patent law, almost all employers will want to see some demonstration of your technical writing skills. If applicable to the job you're applying for, you may want to call attention to skills like legal writing, research, including accurate citation and documentation, analytical abilities, and/or persuasive skills. If you already have one piece of writing that clearly stands out as writing sample material, use it. If a few come to mind, you may want to prepare more than one. Then, when asked for a writing sample, you can pull out the most appropriate one for that particular job, or you can describe the options to the potential employer and let them choose which one they'd like to see. So, beyond choosing what you're going to use as a writing sample, how do you need to prepare it? I strongly recommend these tips. Proofread it to death. That includes looking for typos, misspelled words, and grammar and punctuation errors. You also need to pay close attention to the visual elements of the document. Look for formatting inconsistencies, weird spacing, and so on. Proofread it a million times. Have friends and relatives proofread it too. Make sure the length is appropriate. Some employers will simply ask you for a writing sample. Others will specify length. The length of requested writing samples rarely falls outside of a range between 7 and 30 pages, and for a generic writing sample, i.e. one where the employer doesn't specify a length, 10 to 15 pages is usually ideal. It's great if you have a writing sample that's the length the employer wants, but what if yours is too long? Your first impulse may be to give employers the first part of the document, or to give them the whole document and tell them to stop reading after a certain number of pages. A better approach is to scour the document for those portions that best reflect the writing you'll be doing and provide that excerpt. If you take this approach, you need to contextualize the excerpt for the potential employer. You can do so in one of two ways. Provide a summary of the whole document and indicate which part of the excerpt comes from, or summarize only those parts of the document you don't excerpt. Think of the second approach as the previously on and next on segments of a television show. If you take the former approach, you probably want to include the overall summary on a title page. If you take the latter approach, you may want to use the title page to explain what you're doing. For example, the following pages are the X section of document Y. In order to contextualize the section, it is preceded and followed by summaries of the document before and after the excerpt. Make sure it's current. Don't use something you wrote 10 years ago or 5 years ago when you were still in law school as a writing sample. In some cases, it's appropriate to revise earlier writings to reflect your current writing abilities. For example, if you wrote patent applications as a patent agent and then spent 3 years in law school, you can dust off an old application, review it, and edit it so that it looks like something you might write today. If you do so, it's a good idea to explain that on your cover page as well. Make sure you don't breach confidentiality. Some documents related to patent law will present confidentiality issues, generally related either to the law side, for example, attorney-client privilege, or to the patent side, for example, technical secrets. If you have any concerns about this, remove identifying information from the document. You can substitute generic identifiers or pseudonyms. Either way, indicate on the title page that you did so. Try not to use a writing sample which requires you to explain length and editing for timeliness and editing for confidentiality. It will appear like you're hemming and hawing or making excuses. You should contextualize the document and be ethical about your self-presentation, but you should also cut to the chase. Format it for your purposes. That includes 1. Attaching a title page, especially if you're including any contextualizing notes. Number 2. Creating a header that includes your name. Last name only is okay, the words writing sample, and a brief title if appropriate. Save it as a PDF document. On most computers, you can do this by sending the document to print and then choosing Send to PDF in the dialog box. Because saving the document as a PDF basically preserves the document as a series of pictures, it ensures that what you formatted stays that way. Whether you're printing it out to give to potential employers or emailing it to them, they may not have the same computer settings and/or fonts that you have. In fact, it's a good idea to save everything in PDF format, including your resume and cover letter. Number 2. Positioning statements. Job seekers are constantly asked to articulate who they are, what they have to offer, and what they want. It is useful to have several variations of this information on the tip of your tongue. You will have to do so in both written, for example, cover letter, and oral, for example, interview form. Think about who you might come across as you live your life, network, and make contacts, as well as in the targeted progress from initial contact with a particular employer to receiving an offer. Imagine telling those people about your situation. The classic example of a positioning statement is the elevator speech. You find yourself in an elevator with the person best positioned to give you exactly what you want, and you have only this one elevator ride to convince this person to do so. There are more and less subtle variations of the speech. On one extreme, how do you make the pitch to this person? On the other, how do you make the most progress toward getting what you want while remaining within the constraints of the idle elevator chit-chat? In order to be as effective as possible in a range of settings, prepare versions of your positioning statement or elevator speech that vary in the following ways. 1. Length. 2. Degree of formality. And 3. Level of technicality or specificity. When considering length, think in terms of seconds, not minutes. A good analogy is commercials. Have you ever seen a commercial that seemed to go on forever? How long do you think it really was? Variation in formality and technicality is useful for the range of contexts you might find yourself in. When you're chatting with Edna over coffee at your church and find out that her daughter-in-law runs the boutique firm where you'd love to spend the rest of your professional life, you don't want to whip out the speech you prepared for people at the recent professional conference you attended. In that setting, you'd want to summarize what you do in a quick, informal, and non-technical way. Along similar lines, if you run into that person who runs the boutique firm at a barbecue where you're both chasing after your kids, then you're going to sound like you're coming on way too strong if you go into high oratorical mode. In that context, although you should be informal, you can probably be quite technical. You will be best prepared for this sort of situation if you think about, write down, and practice potential elevator speeches. This might fill many people with horror, but it's much better if you do so. Although it might feel like it's sucking the life out of your speech acts, in reality, if you have your speeches fully internalized, it opens you up to be more natural when opportunities arise. Number 3. Records. The precise kinds of records you will keep depend on how you approach your job search, whether you focus on networking, and if so, whether you contact many people or a few, whether you send out many applications or few, and so on. Here are some records you should definitely keep. Number 1. Contact lists. You might want two lists, one of people in your personal network and one of people you don't know but plan to approach. It's a good idea to write down each person's name, contact information, title, and how you know that person. You may also want to have individual folders for contacts who are part of your more intensive networking efforts. Number 2. Files on individual positions you apply for and on individual organizations you target as good places to work. Number 3. Logs of all communication related to your job search, including date, person, and notes about the content of the communication. These logs may or may not be a part of other files. That is, you might file all of your communication related to a particular firm with other material related to that firm. Other useful items for your resource portfolio. In addition to the essential components of your resource portfolio discussed above, you should also consider the following components. Important stories. Whether you're networking or in interviews, the job search process will require you to come up with stories about yourself, stories that illustrate your most significant accomplishments, the things you're most proud of, times you overcame particularly thorny problems or people who were difficult to work with, or the kind of person you are. Think of the number of interview questions that ask versions of "What are your strengths and weaknesses?" or "What's your most significant accomplishment?" or "Tell me about a time when you dealt with something difficult." The more stories you have on hand, the more successful you'll be. If you identify your most important or interesting accomplishments ahead of time, you won't find yourself in an interview frantically flipping through your Rolodex of memories, grabbing at the first thing that comes to mind. Instead, you'll have the best examples ready, knowing exactly what to say about those examples, and you might even be able to throw in some rhetorical flourish or humor. Everyone loves a good storyteller, and you can be a good storyteller if you prepare ahead of time. For each story, you'll want to 1. Set up the situation by identifying the challenge you faced. 2. Describe both what you did and how you did it. 3. Convey what resulted from your actions, in concrete as opposed to abstract terms. And 4. Indicate what the story illustrates about you and what a great employee you'd be. Business cards. If you currently have business cards and you want people to use the contact information printed on them, use them if it's appropriate. In that case, you're all set. If not, you may want to have some made, especially if you're going to be doing a lot of networking. It's remarkably easy and inexpensive to create professional-looking business cards. You can design your own, or pay a professional to design them for you. If you want to design your own, many computer programs come with business card templates. Or you can simply set the paper size to 3.5 inches wide by 2 inches tall in a word processing program. If price is an issue, you can often get high-quality business cards printed at a local print or copy shop, much less expensively than at a chain like Kinko's. You can also buy letter-sized business card sheets at many office supply stores. Beware, though, that these often have obvious perforation marks when the pages are broken down. Try to purchase sheets that don't use perforations, or if you can't avoid them, try to trim them off. In designing your cards, don't over-decorate with graphics or words. Err on the side of professionalism, which means allowing white, or whatever color, space to exist on the card. It also means erring on the side of being boring. If you want to do something visually interesting, a good guideline is to carefully choose one design element, a color of text or paper, an interesting font, an unusual alignment, a logo or other image, even a line or a shape, and then use it like you mean it. One strong design element sends a confident message. Include all of your contact information. Give yourself a title. It can be patent agent or patent attorney, or something more specific to your particular situation. You can also create a tagline. Don't go overboard. Be descriptive. For example, you could write your name on the top line, your title on the next line, and specializing in X, Y, and Z on the next line. While you're thinking about the aesthetic choices involved in business cards, consider the possibility of creating your own letterhead and even envelope design. Envelopes are less important because they are usually opened and discarded immediately. It doesn't have to be a complicated design endeavor. What is useful is to create some consistency between your stationery and your business cards, and even your resume, but only if that works well. You can usually add whatever design elements you use on your business cards or similar design elements to the word processing program you use to write your cover letters. A website. Another resource to consider is creating a website specifically for your job search. Doing so can be a fantastic branding tool. You can make aesthetic decisions, include any information you'd like, and so forth. A website can provide potential employers with an opportunity to get to know you better. You can post job-related information on a website, including downloadable writing or other work samples, positioning statements, biographical material, and, of course, your resume. It's an opportunity to include all of those things that you wanted to put on your resume but had to leave out in order to keep it brief. You can use design elements that match your business cards and other materials. Despite all of these advantages, there are several things to watch out for. Number 1. make sure that your professional website is just that, professional. Avoid informal language and content. Don't link to websites that aren't professional, for example, family members or friends. In fact, you may want to avoid links altogether unless they're important to your overall career package. Of course, you want your site to look elegant, but be careful about overdoing aesthetics and bells and whistles. If your website is over-designed, people may think that you're trying to use style to overcome a lack of substance, or they may not like your taste. Number 2. Consider whether you will be able to maintain the site at the level of professionalism you would like. Especially, consider whether you have both the time and the technical know-how to keep it updated and address any glitches that come up. Any edge that having a website can create for you can be more than undone by a shoddy site or one that doesn't work. If you're not sure that you can maintain the website, hire a professional or forego this aspect of your resource portfolio. While we are on the subject of websites, now is the time to locate and eliminate any incriminating evidence of yourself on the web. Google yourself and see what comes up. While you're at it, do a Google image search. Search using all variations of your name. Look on sites like Facebook, MySpace, and YouTube. If there is anything on the web that you don't want there, see if you can do anything to get it deleted, or at least to have your name disassociated from it. There are a potentially limitless number of resources you can gather and develop before launching your job search. In fact, even the 9 items listed here can turn into a full-time job. You could develop an all-out brand identity for yourself, complete with logo and matching stationery, letterhead, business cards, and websites. You could create a blog to go with your website and spend hours a day working on it. You could also write 100 positioning statements and important stories. Any of these things could help you get a job. But don't get stuck here. You have everything you absolutely need in those first 6 items, plus some potential useful things in the 3 recommended ones. Spend a little time putting them together and recognize the line between perfectionism and getting into a rut. There is usually plenty of time to polish your important stories or your stationery as you begin your job search, and it's likely that unexpected factors, for example, unique requirements of a particular job, will require you to work on your materials a little differently than you originally anticipated. Speaking of expecting the unexpected, the next chapter discusses the aspect of your job search that you have the least control over, your references. There are 3 ways to get good references. 1. Make potential employers so excited about you that anything your referees say will make them happy. 2. Get lucky and have references who say exactly the right thing. And 3. Prepare your references and gently coach them to say the kinds of things you'd like them to say. While the majority of this document is about how to create that first situation, the next section provides a recipe for finding the right references, which may create the second situation, and for doing that crucial prep work that can make a difference between a bad or okay reference, a referee sounding lukewarm or misinterpreting you on a large or small issue, and a terrific one.